Well, hello, runners. Welcome to episode 27 of the I Run Things podcast, the podcast for the everyday runner in search for that extra bit of motivation to get out there. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. In today's episode, we chat with Sierre Corsetti. Sierre ran the Great Wall Marathon, and this just blows my mind. His story is very inspirational. Sierre had a serious skydiving accident a few years back, and he had to go through several surgeries and, well, be stuck on a wheelchair for many years. After a dare with his surgeon, he decided to run his first marathon. And this is his story. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And if you enjoy these kind of crazy adventures, you might want to listen to episode number 26, in which I chat with Chris Seymour. Chris ran the Marathon Grand Slam, also known as the Seven Marathons on Seven Continents Challenge, plus the Marathon in the North Pole. This was an amazing episode, and I would recommend that you listen to that one as well. Again, that episode is number 26. But now, without further ado, let's play the interview with Sierre. Hi, Sierre. How are you?
I'm good, Susie. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Welcome to the podcast.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
You and I connected on Facebook, and I think you have such an amazing background that's completely, we're doing a little bit of talking before starting hit record, and your life is amazing.
Aww.
So, yeah. So first and foremost, why don't you introduce yourself to us?
Hey, hi, I'm Sierre Corsetti. I'm a suspension artist located in New York. I run a suspension group called White Flag Suspensions. I'm also a runner, I guess. I don't know. I still don't think of myself as a runner yet, but I run, so I guess I'm a runner.
Right.
Yeah, that's me.
That's awesome. And I know that you have gone through something that for most of us, it would have been one of those experiences that's like a make it or leave it. You know, like it would have broken so many of us because you had an accident, skydiving accident.
Yeah, when I was 18 years old, it was a birthday present to myself, me and a bunch of friends. We decided to go skydiving. This was back in 95, so 24 years ago about.
Yeah.
So we went out to New Jersey, and we decided to take a whole day skydiving. Back then, things were done a little bit differently than I believe they're done now, but we spent the first half of the day training in a hay field, leaping off of bales, learning how to roll properly. And then we went up 10,000 feet to do our jump. Nowadays, I believe people, when they jump tandem. But with the company we went with, or maybe it was just in the time period back then, they didn't do that. We did not. So we were all by ourselves, and they basically opened up the door. We'd grab a little latch on the outside of the door, go out, and then just let go. I felt like everything was great until this point in time. And then I'm coming down, and you're coming down so much faster than you imagine it would be. That ground is coming at you, and I completely froze, which is the one thing they said not to do. They said, stay loose. When you hit the ground, roll with it. And I turned into a perfect brick. And I hit the ground really, really hard. I thought I sprained my ankle at the time. Everyone came running over to see how I was doing. And I'm like, hey, give me a hand, help me up. And everyone's like, just stay where you are until the ambulance gets here. And I'm like, why do I need an ambulance? I've got a sprained ankle. And then I looked down, and that's when I saw that I had multiple compound fractures. So my the little bone in the back of my leg, I think it's the tibia. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. That snapped completely in half, tore through my calf. My heel actually got pushed up and was coming out of the same opening that was torn in my calf. It was about maybe a 9-inch gash. My hip was broken. The large bone on my other leg was broken. And my spine was basically cracked in a few places. Needless to say, even someone wanted to help me up, they couldn't, because I couldn't walk at this time. I could feel, but there was no response. So they took me to the hospital. I actually still didn't really feel anything until I got to the hospital. And then once they started poking, prodding me there, that's when I felt everything and I kind of blacked out. Over the course of 3 to 4 years, I had to have 7 or 8 different surgeries to put me back together. And during that time, a lot of what I was hearing from the doctors were, we're going to do our best, but you're probably never going to walk again. I was in a wheelchair for 3.5 years throughout this time period. And I had some movement, but not much. Like I could, if I really thought about it, I could move a little bit, but you know, I could wiggle a toe. I could slightly move my calf, but as far as full range, there wasn't even a partial range of motion. There was minimal. So the doctor's like, hey, we're probably not going to walk again, but you know, try whatever you want to do. they did their best. You know, they like I said, multiple surgeries. They did everything they could for me. And I had about a year of physical therapy. And then it was just like, well, it moved from physical therapy about trying to learn how to walk again or being able to walk again into how do you live your life now in a wheelchair? You know, I guess a little bit of that was going on in the beginning too, but it turned less from learning how to, we're going to try to get you walking again to we're going to teach you how to live your life from a chair. Anyway, so my first, when the doctor told me this, my first response, because I like to joke around, was, well, I guess marathons are out of the question for me then. By the way, at this point in time, I was not a runner. Running was the furthest thing from my mind, you know? I just made an off joke about marathon running and, you know, we laughed about it. So fast forward, I started, you know, every day I push myself, a little more motion, a little more being able to move my legs. After about, I want to say a year or so, I was able to progress from a chair to using crutches really stiltedly. About a year or so from that, I was using a cane, and I would say maybe about 3.5 to 4 years after the accident, I was finally able to walk again on my own.
So did anybody help you out throughout that process? Did you go to physical therapy or did a family member not encouraging you, or did you just on your own?
In the beginning, for like the first year or so, I was in physical therapy, you know, and we were trying a lot of different things. And a lot of it was, so before that, I lifted weights a lot. I mean, you could see we're on video, but for people on the podcast, you know, I'm a big guy. I'm not, you know, I weightlift a lot. A lot of the things that we were doing at physical therapy, I could do on my own.
Okay.
And I know, obviously, they have the knowledge of coming from that medical background of what to do specific for my body. I know it's different than working out. But, I mean, when you're going to see a professional for a year and a half, you kind of know the routine of what you're doing. So I kind of stopped physical therapy after about a year, year and a half, and just said, if I'm ever going to do this again, I'm going to do this on my own. And it wasn't like, I'm going to do this. Like, I know this is going to happen, because I never knew it was going to happen that I was going to be able to walk again. But I knew that I was going to keep trying. And if it happened, cool. And if it didn't happen, what's the harm in trying, you know?
Right, right. That's such an amazing story in and of itself. So when did you start running? Was it like shortly after? Because this is like...
It was way after.
Okay.
2011, I'm going to say. I think it was like 2011, 2012. I could look it up exactly for you, but it was in that time period.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into my surgeon who performed, I would say probably four or five out of my surgeries was done by this one doctor. And I ran into him again, and he was like, oh my God, you're walking. This is great. Fantastic. How are you doing? And we chat a little bit. And then he goes to me, so what about that marathon you said you were going to run? And I said, I said that as a joke, but I always believe when you say something, do it. Even if you say it as a joke, even if you're drunk, if you say something, do it. So I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to run a marathon. And Yeah, and then I started running with this one goal in mind that I was going to run a marathon. I was going to run the New York Marathon, and then I was going to be done. that didn't happen. I didn't run New York at that time period. I was so confident that this was going to happen, that the universe was going to come into alignment for me. And I started training, you know. So I was just going to apply in the lottery and get into New York and run the marathon. That was my goal. Needless to say, like many people who apply for the lottery, you do not get into the lottery.
I've applied 3 years. 3 years. Yeah.
So I applied for the lottery to get in, and I didn't. And I was looking at other options, and you know, as you know, I know you're part of the 9+1 program. I was like, "Well, 9+1 program, but that's not going to help me for this year. You know, that'll help me for next year." Or you can, I know it's a fundraising donation. At the time, I was saying I could buy a spot because I don't know anyone who would donate money on my behalf so I could go run a marathon. So I was like, "Well, I can drop $3,000 of my own money and buy a spot," and I wasn't going to do that. So
it's a lot of money.
Yeah. So I started thinking about other races, and I realized that for half of that, I could fly to Athens and run the Athens Classic Marathon. So that was actually my first marathon, was Athens.
So oh my God. So yeah. That's like go big or go home. Because isn't it like super hilly?
So here's the thing about Athens, and I didn't really research it because at this time, I don't consider myself a runner now, but at that time I really wasn't a runner. I didn't realize differences in, you know, terrain at the time. So I just went to Athens to run the marathon, and it was a different date than New York. I think it was a month earlier. So the training program that I was using, my longest run at that time was only like 16 miles. So I wasn't prepared at all. So Athens has one hill. It starts at mile one and goes to 24. Like the whole course is uphill, and then it like dips a little bit at the end. It is an extremely brutal uphill race, and I love every second of it.
Oh my God. And it ends at the stadium, right?
Yeah. Well, it ends at the stadium. And then I had a friend who I went with. We decided after the stadium to run up to the Acropolis.
Yes.
Yes.
That's another hike.
Afterwards, which is a little bit of a hike. So we packed a little bit onto the end of it because, you know, we were all like, oh, well, like, I could be totally wrong. We were like, oh, in the original story, you know, he ran into the Acropolis and he dropped there. So we gotta do that too. And, you know, so we did our own little thing afterwards. But yeah, no, it ends in the stadium, which is phenomenal. You know, you come in and all these seats around you, everyone's there screaming, cheering. Athens was a really, really good time.
Yeah, I've heard great things about Athens Marathon. So then I know that how many marathons have you run?
So far, 5.
Okay.
So
again, you go big or go home because...
Well, after Athens, I did New York. And then I realized that I did 2 continents, you know, 2 marathons. Or 2 continents, and then I was like, oh, why not run a marathon on every continent? And that's where I'm going towards now. So as of now, I got 5 marathons on 5 continents.
So which one did you do after New York City?
After Athens, I did New York. After New York, I did the Great Wall.
So okay.
The Great Wall was after New York, and that would have been 2015, I think. Yeah, around 2015. I could look it up exactly, but 2015
would have been Great Wall. After Great Wall?
After Great Wall was my favorite one, actually, was Rio de Janeiro.
Oh my God.
And I mean, not so much for the race. I think the Great Wall had the most iconic race in my memory, but Brazil was amazing. You know, cause I'm not going to go somewhere and run a race. I spend like 2-3 weeks, you know, vacationing around it. So, then was Rio de Janeiro. And then my last one was in Sydney, Australia.
Okay. I've heard great things about Sydney too.
And I was supposed to be, in October, this coming October was supposed to be Cape Town, South Africa, but that's been canceled, you know,
or right.
Well, it's postponed until next year.
It will happen. I mean, races they'll come back. So, I mean, there's a lot of us who want to race again. So they'll come back. They're ready for us to open up our wallets and just give them money.
we're all ready to give it to them. So,
right. So let's talk about Great Wall.
Yeah.
How did you do it? Through an agency? How did you organize the trip?
There are a few different agencies that do trips to the Great Wall Marathon in China. And the reason I actually went with the one I went was the agency I went with was because of the package they had surrounding the actual marathon itself. So all these tour companies are going to have, here's your race, but here's also these activities we've lined up around the race. Right. And most of them do, you know, the Terracotta Warriors. They might do like a side trip to Xi'an or head down to, you know, Shanghai afterwards. But the tour company that I went with, they actually had a side trip, a day-long side trip to Mount Huashan, which if you've ever seen any of those, like the craziest hikes in the world, there's this one hike called Plank Road, where it's just basically a plank on the side of a mountain. That's actually at Mount Huashan. So I wanted to do that also while I was in China. Cause you know, who goes to China? I don't go to China all the time. So I want to get
at it while I'm there. You might as well. Yeah.
So I went with the tour company and they handled everything. They handled, you know, the hotels, the buses, the, all the things that you would expect a tour company to handle for you.
Right. So how far in advance did you get to Beijing?
Oh, we got to Beijing about a week in advance, I'd say.
Okay, so that's good because you had time to
adjust for the time zone.
Yeah, because the jet lag.
I actually never experienced jet lag. So, I mean, I know we talked about suspension a little bit earlier. I actually work three jobs. So just suspension's my main job. I was talking to a friend of mine who he's actually a pulmonologist who works with a lot of doctors who do sleep studies. And he was saying that basically what jet lag is you have to reset your sleep rhythm. It's not really about flying. It's just about sleep rhythms.
Right.
And in people like myself who only sleep 3 to 4 hours a night or who, you know, sometimes sleep during the daytime and work throughout the night, because our sleep schedule is so screwed up to begin with, we don't really get jet lag. And that's because we're always operating from a point of jet lag. So it's kind of like, I don't notice jet lag because I'm always jet lagged.
So what did you see in Beijing? Did you stay there or did you
We stood in Beijing for the first week. We stood in Beijing. Oh God, we did the, you know, obviously the Forbidden City. We did a day trip to the Great Wall. So where the marathons actually run is not on the tourist part of the Great Wall. So basically when everyone goes to the Great Wall, they go to this one section that's very highly manicured and curated for outsider experience. And you know, it's basically like Disneyland. They have people selling food carts everywhere and people selling toys. And it's very commercialized. Where the marathon was on a completely separate part of the Great Wall, where it's you know, more rural. The Great Wall is I believe they say it's like 10,000 feet long. So, not 10,000 feet, like 10,000 miles long, they say.
Yeah, it's huge.
So, you know, running on the Great Wall could be, you know, in a completely separate area than where most people go to. We did a day trip to the Great Wall, the more touristy section. We did, we went to the Forbidden City. We went to the Temple of Heaven. We did day trips to the Emperor's Summer Palace. And then we did the day trip to Mount Huashan, which was the real main reason that I wanted to go to the, the marathon's the main reason, was the second main reason why I wanted to go there.
You were not disappointed, right?
No, not disappointed at all. And then after the marathon, we went to Xi'an. And then after Xi'an, I actually came home and the tour continued on to Shanghai. Because at that point in time, we were already at 2 weeks and I had to get back to work.
Okay. So when you do the marathon, is this a marathon where local people participate in, or is this just for this one company organizing?
I would say that, I mean, obviously anyone can run in a race, you know, so definitely there were locals, but I would say that it was mostly foreigners. China basically has this race and they sell the ability to bring in outsiders to different tour companies. So the tour company that brings people to this race from the United States is a separate tour company than the one that does it from the UK, separate company from South Africa. So the tour companies are really the only ways to get into the race as a foreigner, you know? Yeah, I couldn't just go and do it on my own. It would have to be through a tour company.
Right. So is there something like an expo where you go get your bib? Or
I'm trying to, I don't believe there was an expo. Now, I don't believe we had an expo. I think the tour company had it all for all our bibs and timing chips for us at the hotel. There might have been an expo, just the tour company might have went to the expo and got all our stuff for us, which I've had plenty, you know, plenty of tour companies do that. They'll be like, oh, you don't have to go to the expo. We as a group will pick up your bibs and your race chips and we'll just bring it to the hotel. And you can go if you want to, but you don't have to.
Right.
I always do when it's available, just because I like to, you know, hang out and see and buy shirts and see what.
And get, things. Yeah, get free stuff. You get freebies too. Sometimes there's beer. So then the day of the race, is it an early race? What time does it start?
Another thing that I don't really remember. I do remember this, that it was an amazingly hot race.
Okay.
It was above 80 degrees.
So when is it held? Is it in the summertime? What month is it?
It is in May, May 16th, 2015.
Okay.
And I remember the temperatures were, they were hot. It was, it started off the day around 80 degrees and it wasn't an early, early race. I think we had to start around 7:38 a.m.
Okay. Which is, well, depending on whose standard, it might be very early. Because where you staying, do you stay in a hotel in Beijing?
Yeah.
So we're staying
at a hotel in Beijing. And then from Beijing to the race starts about a 2-hour bus ride.
Okay.
So yeah, so we were all on the bus by 3 a.m. and then, you know, the bus ride over and, you know, then you get ready, go into your pens, you know, so that took a while. So I was up probably like 3 a.m. at least, you know, getting ready to go.
So then once you get to the Great Wall, how do they do the corrals for people?
So the thing about the race, there's not a lot of people. I don't know how many people there are, like a number off my head, but it's not like New York where there's, you know, like 80,000 people. It's in the beginning square, which probably was maybe about the size of a school, an average school, everyone fit in that area.
Okay.
No, so it was only a few thousand people. It wasn't a lot of people. It's a pretty intense race. Like, yes, it's a marathon. Yes, it's 26.2 miles, but it's mostly stairs. So if you flatten it out, it's probably more like 40 to 42 miles that you're actually going through. And it's stairs that aren't, it's not like an actual staircase. So when they built the Great Wall, they built it specifically to repel people. So one of the things that they did was they developed the staircases to be completely non-symmetrical. So every stair is a different length, height. It's all wobbly. So you can't just hit a tempo and go. You got to constantly look where you're putting your feet. So it's a tough race. And I think you're not going to PR, obviously.
Well.
Actually, the organizers do tell you whatever your time is, expect at least a 50% addition to that. You know, and I'm a slow guy to begin with, so that was always on the back of my mind. You know, I did average on a street race probably like, you know, about 5.5 hours. You know, so I'm like 5.5 hours. You know, it has an 8-hour cutoff. 50%, man, I'm really pushing that off there. But yeah, there's not a lot of people there. I just think with the cost involved of getting there and it being more remote and being, you know, not more of an adventure and something you're going to do for fun, not I'm trying to get a time, you know?
Right.
I think it's a smaller pool of people that go to it.
So do they organize people by pace at all?
Yeah, they still organize people by pace.
Okay.
But it was a much smaller corrals, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So
I was just thinking it would be insanity if they put someone who's faster behind someone who's slower.
You know,
because then that would jam things up, right?
Especially since I was going to say, like you're imagining, there are some parts where the wall that you're running on is only maybe 4 feet wide. So where you can only have maybe two runners abreast at a time. Right. But in that beginning, it's so steep that everyone's just kind of almost, it's almost a climb. Like there's parts where you're running where yes, you're using your feet, but you're using your hands also that it's so steep. It's you're actually kind of almost like scrambling and hiking, you know, you're going up on your hands and feet because it's such a steep incline in some of the steps. So if someone was slower, you know, obviously slow on the right, faster on the left, people would call out, hey, on your left and come through. There wasn't a whole lot of log jams or traffic jams going on, but people weren't obviously going as fast as they normally would have. So
right. One thing that, do they have any kind of water?
Yeah.
Along the way? Okay, cool.
Yeah, they're really well staffed with water.
Okay.
So the first half of the race is, I think it's like a quarter to a third of the race is on the Great Wall. And then you actually come off the Great Wall and you run through a bunch of rural towns and farms for a good chunk. And then you finish back on the wall. So on the wall itself, yes, the stairs are narrow, but every 100 feet or so, it opens up into like a parapet. You know what I mean? It opens up to like a castle kind of thing. And they would have at least every mile, they would have a water station. They were really, really good on the water. And especially since it was such a hot day, it was definitely the hottest race I've ever run, including Brazil. It was definitely the hottest race. So they had plenty of water. They had plenty of volunteers. A few people that I was running with that day did get heat stroke and they were taken care of immediately, you know, so the support was actually really, really well done.
So is it manned by local volunteers or are they foreigners too?
A lot of local volunteers, but I think the company that actually runs the event itself, I could be wrong on this, I'm just going off of memory, I believe it's a Dutch company. So the officials and a lot of the organizers were European.
Okay.
However, a lot of the volunteers were local Chinese.
Okay.
And at the time, I didn't speak Chinese. So.
Do you now?
I do now. That's what I've been doing in the last 7 months of quarantine is learning languages.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Good for you. So now you have to come back.
Now I got to go practice. Back. Well, yeah. I've been back to China 4 or 5 times since then. Separately, completely off topic, my wife is she's a high-level martial artist. She was on the U.S. Kung Fu team, and they're constantly traveling to around the world in these big competitions. So I've been to China because of my wife, you know, in her high-level competitions a bunch of times since.
Good for you. That's a story for another podcast. Does she run?
She does not run. She hates running. But okay. She does these crazy, ridiculous kung fu things. She could definitely beat me in a fight, hands down. Easily.
Oh my God. That's one of the things. If I could reincarnate in someone else, I would like to be a kung fu. Like, I would have loved to, like, choo choo. Okay, let's backtrack. So, are there porta potties along the way? What happens if you're like on top of the Great Wall and you need to go to a bathroom? Have to go back or?
I believe there was porta potties at certain locations along the wall. The part that you're on the wall, if my memory serves me correctly, it's only in 5 mile chunks.
Okay.
You know, so you're on the wall for a bit and then you come off for like a little bit and then you're back on. I don't think you're ever on the wall for more than 5 miles. I don't remember there being a porta potty on the wall. That's not to say that there isn't one. Generally, when I run, I don't pee until that. No, until that. I normally pee in the beginning of my day. Just, you know,
getting of us. Yeah.
You know, before the race begins, I hit a porta potty. And then, but once I start running, I don't normally even look for a porta potty until about maybe mile 12.
Okay.
So maybe there were, I don't remember. but it's not
you weren't looking for them, right?
I wasn't looking for them. Yeah.
Right. I was just curious because the idea of having in the parapets a green porta potty, like, would have been. So once you're off on this, those sections that you go off of the Great Wall,
where the race is held, you're nowhere near a major city.
Okay.
I think the closest city would be Beijing, which was about a 2-hour bus ride away. So it's all very, very small buildings. You're running past, you know, homes that are, you know, maybe one family home. Like, you're not running past apartment buildings or supermarkets or anything, right, any large construction. You're running through all small towns. But yeah, no, everyone who lived in that small town was definitely there in each town that you go through. You know, like I said, everyone's cheering you on. Kids are running out. They're trying to hand you drinks. I felt bad because I wanted to take them just to, like, be like, oh, thank you. But, you know, you're not going to drink something that you don't know what it
is. You don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I think there was malintent. Just I don't know. Right. So how my body would react. Because right. I learned that actually on a previous race, to always know what you're putting into your body during a race. Don't try anything new to eat on a race day. I learned that during Athens with goo. Yeah.
And the water is different in every country, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you could go, you know, to Europe. There's places in Europe that the water, if you're like by the Mediterranean, the water is not. So if you drink it, you could get sick.
You know what I actually thought was unique? I remember thinking this at the time, although now that I know a little bit more, I guess more places do this. There were more Coca-Cola stations than there were water stations. And I remember at the time, I thought that was really odd to me. Like, why would anyone want to drink Coca-Cola? But I mean, now I've encountered other races that do that too. So I guess that is a thing. But I do remember that from the Great Wall, that they had Coca-Cola stations. And there would be some stations that run past, like, oh, do you have water? Like, no, Coca-Cola. But now that you mentioned with the water quality, I wonder if a big part of that is because the water quality, it's easier to control the quality of Coca-Cola than it is to control water.
Right. That would make sense. Yeah. And that's something that you have to think about.
Yeah. But yes, I was just drinking the water.
And nothing happened to you. Good. So one thing that I didn't ask you before, did you train? Did you like hit the stepper at the gym or something for this, did you just run?
I just run. I know a lot of people, you know, listening to your podcast, I don't really train properly, I guess. Like, I'm not out there going, oh, I got to do tempos and speed runs. I just go for mileage. So I've been using the Hal Higdon training module on my phone. I've been using that since I've started running, like in 2011 or so. And it's got me through 5 marathons.
Right.
And I know people are like, oh, well, if you start doing this and this and this, you'll be so much better for the next one. And I'm like, you know, I only do a marathon once every year or two. I'd hate to switch from something I know that works to some new method that might be fantastic, but I don't know. And then find out that it doesn't work for me. And so I just stick with what I know. So now I have the same training program that I've been using for every single marathon. And it's gotten me through all of them. I'm a little bit concerned towards the end with Antarctica, since that's going to be, you know, it's a lot of snow. that I might have to do some additional training, just because, you know, obviously you're not going to be running in your normal running gear. You're going to be in a different kind of cold weather protection.
Right. You need layers for that one.
Yeah, but for Great Wall, nope, just normal standard training, just what I normally do. The Hal Higdon iPhone app. I've been using it for
very nice. So I know there's cutoffs throughout the marathon. So what's the first cutoff?
So they actually just have the one cutoff.
So you have to finish before a certain.
Yeah, so you have one cutoff, yeah. And then you have the end time. So remember how earlier I said how you run along the wall for a good chunk, and then you come off and you run through rural towns and you finish back on the wall. So what happens is, if when you come back to the Great Wall the second time, if you don't hit that, and that's at mile, I believe it's mile 20. At mile 20, if you don't hit that by 6 hours, they cut off the race. Well, for you. So I was very close to that cutoff. I believe when I hit that, I was at 5:58. And it's when you enter in the second time, it's actually you're running through this huge archway and there's these big doors on it. And they were actually beginning to close the doors. So I ran through as they were closing the doors. And it was like that scene in Indiana Jones where he slides through and then reaches back and grabs his hat. It reminded me of that perfectly. But yeah, so I was the last person to make it through that door. And then I think it was like, I think it was like 70% of the people in the race were behind me. So they automatically got cut off. You know, their race ended there. They closed the door and that's it for them. So yeah, so there I am. I'm now the last person in this race, you know? And I'm running and there's a gentleman who's like right behind me, smiling, just, you know, and I'm like, hey buddy, what are you doing? Like, you're obviously, you know, you're doing good. You can pass me, you know? And he's like, oh, I'm the sweeper. And at the time I didn't really, you know, I've never really experienced this before. So I didn't know what a sweeper was. So I'm like, oh, what do you do? He's like, oh, I just, you know, when the time comes, I pull people off the race. So I was like, he's, you know, so the race has an 8-hour limit. So basically once you hit that 8 hours, I know he's going to pull me right off this race. So now I'm like, I got to get as far away from this guy as possible. He's really nice guy, but you know, he's now my enemy. So I realized, just like, you know, when you're out camping in the woods, you don't have to outrun a bear. You just got to outrun people who aren't as fast as you. So I'm like, as long as I run fast than the guy in front of me and put him between me and this guy who I dubbed in my head the Terminator, because he's not even running. He's like, you know, in every horror movie where people are running through the woods, they look back and this guy's just like slowly walking, and but he's always right there. That was this guy. So I'm running past people. I'm going, okay, that's one person between me and him. That's two people between me and him. And I got up to about mile, I'm going to say about 24, about halfway between 24 and 25. And I look back and he's now coming down the road. We're off the Great Wall. We're running the last stretches through this little mile of road back to the finishing center. And here comes a van with the 10 people that I passed, and the Terminator's driving this van. And he pulls up and he's like, hey, it's 8 hours. You got to hop in. I got to cut you off. And here I am, 24 and a half. You know, I got literally less than 2 miles left to go. And I'm like, there's no way this is happening. Like, and looking back, I'm like, man, that was kind of maybe a bad move on my part, because I'm putting someone else in a bad position. You know, the guy's just doing his job.
Right.
And he's doing a job for a good reason. You know, they have to open up the course. They got to, you know, it was kind of, might've been greedy on my part, but whatever. I was a little greedy. So I said, hey, you can't do this for me. He's like, hey, you know, you're part of this race and we're responsible for you. You got to come with us. You know, you can't do this. This is our race. So I say, you know what? You're absolutely right. I took off my bib. I handed it to him. I said, I'm not part of your race. I'm just a U.S. citizen. I'm not part of your event. I'm just out for a run. Leave me alone. So he radio chatted back to center a little bit. And I guess he said, okay, enjoy your run. And he left.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's incredible. But one thing is that when you're at that point in a marathon, your brain is not even thinking. So I don't blame you for anything. It's like you don't even know. Like, all you want to do is just complete the race.
Yeah. And I was like, there's no way I'm not. Like, I flew here. I spent all this money. I did all this time. Like, I don't know if I'm ever going to come back here again. Like, and I'm right there. So, oh, another thing he was saying, he's like, don't worry, I'll drive back. I'll give you a medal anyway. And I'm like, I don't want your medal. I don't care. If I cared about a medal, I could go home and buy one on eBay. Like, I'm here to run a race, you know?
Right.
So he let me run and I started running that. I feel bad for my friends at the, who were waiting for me actually, because from their point of view, they were saying that they heard, all right, guys, the race is over, the last runner. And they're like, Where is Sear? He's not through here. So they started getting a little nervous. Think maybe I got taken off with heat stroke, because a few people did get taken off with heat stroke. So they actually started coming up the course. They met me about, I would say, about a half mile before the finish line. And then we all ran in together. And so then I completed 26 too. The Terminator was there and he came over. He said, you earned this, and put a medal around my neck. And I said, thank you very much.
That's so awesome. That's so great. So was the finish line still there? Like, did you cross?
The finish line was still there. Everyone was still there. Because a lot of people were still in the post-race village. So that was all still going. It was still like a party atmosphere. But as far as like, you know, announcers, like announced people coming through, like they were gone, you know. But the physical finish line was still there.
Very nice.
The bad thing about finishing so late is I missed all the free massages. Because our tour guide was like, oh, massages for everyone. But by the time I got through, it was so late. Like, no, we got to go back on the bus. We got a post-race dinner we got to get to. So yeah, that was the Great Wall for me. It was a awesome, awesome, epic time.
Did you take a picture with the Terminator?
Yeah,
you
course.
Did, right?
Yeah, okay. I'll text you some pictures later.
So then what did you do right after the race? Did you celebrate big? Because that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, this isn't funny, but the weird thing is, like I said, a few of my friends did suffer heat stroke, and one of the guys was an ultra marathon runner. And wow. I thought it's so weird. Like, here I am, like, yes, I run, so I'm a runner, but like, I'm not a typical, you wouldn't look at me and see a runner. And here's a guy who's an ultra marathoner, and, you know, he got taken out medically and I finished. I thought that was a little weird. But you know, everyone's body is different. So, and how we react day to day is different than you can be super strong one day and have a bad day. And, you know, so I'm not disparaging anyone else. I just thought it was weird that, you know, here I am, not really a healthy kind of guy, making it through. But yeah, so we went back to the hotel. You know, we had a lovely, lovely dinner. And then I went to bed and slept.
Like a baby.
Like a baby. That's what I do after every marathon. I go home, I eat a big dinner, and I sleep.
And you deserved it. So were you in a lot of pain afterwards? Is there a difference in between just running New York City, for example, and doing a marathon that's mainly steps?
I would say yes. However, I do a lot of climbing. So I think I was more used to that kind of physical activity. I actually personally found that the stairs for me were easier than the flat ground, only because I'm so used to doing climbing. You know, I do a lot of peaks around the US, and one of my regimens is just I'll hop on a stair climber and I'll just, you know, throw on a 50, 60 pound pack on my back and I'll just climb for an hour or two while I'm watching something, you know? So I feel that I'm actually a better climber than I am a runner. So doing the stairs wasn't really as taxing for me as people who never really encounter that kind of a physical activity.
Very nice. I mean, kudos to you, because this is just amazing. I mean, you have to be in really good shape to be able to pull this off.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm a big guy. At the time, things are a little bit now differently due to COVID, obviously. But at the time, I mean, I'm 6 feet and I'm pushing 300 pounds. You know, I'm a big guy. When I'm running, I'm not, you know, this lithe creature, you know, running gracefully. I am I'm a steamroller, you know. So when I first started running, this is totally nothing to do with the Great Wall, but when I first started running, I would run at night because, you know, less people around. And there's this path by my house. It's called the Green Path. It's basically goes throughout all of New York City, and you only touch parkland. You're running through all the New York City parks, and it starts on the edges of Queens and goes all the way deep into Brooklyn. So anyway, I would run that at night. So here I am running like 2 a.m, 3 a.m, you know, training. And I was always, for the first month, I was scared because I'm like, oh man, it's dark out. What if someone's going to like jump out? And then one of my friends goes to me like, you realize you're a dark skinned, 6 foot, 300 pound black guy running through the woods, full stream. Like no one's coming near you. Are you kidding me? I was like, oh yeah, I guess you're right.
That's too funny. This was so good, though. I so enjoyed talking to you. So if anybody has questions about the Great Wall Marathon, where can they reach out to you?
Really, my only social media nowadays is Facebook. C-E-R-E.
Okay. I'll put it below so that people can reach out to you.
Perfect.
And I hope to see you out there in some of the New York races, hopefully.
Yeah, once they open up again. And I can't wait to cheer on the side when you run New York next year.
I hope, like, you know how they are, because the race, so in theory, I have my N+1 for next year.
Next year.
But they're going to do it scattered because they had to cancel these years. So those people are going to go to next year. So it's possible they bump me to 2022.
Gotcha.
We'll see. So we'll see. It'll happen.
Definitely.
Yeah. At some point, I'll keep trying. Well, thank you so much, Seer.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Well, I hope you enjoyed this interview. If you did, can I ask you a favor? Would you write a review on your favorite podcast platform? This helps our community grow, and it also keeps me motivated to keep doing this and bringing you other amazing guests. Also, please visit our other social media platforms and let us know how we're doing. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and the links will be in the show notes below. With that, I hope you're having a great week. And I hope you tune in to listen to next week's episode. Run fearless.